Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
This is Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Here's a newsflash for you. It's hot in Los Angeles. Even crossing the street on a day like today can be a drag if there's no shade.
And imagine if we were waiting this long period on the other side of the street.
I don't want to.
I don't either.
Now, there's a good chance you're used to this. It's in the mid-90s if you're in the valleys today, standing in the sun, waiting for the light to turn green. Well, I hope you like it, because it's going to be like this a lot more. City leaders actually estimate that parts of the city inland from the beach will see the number of 95-degree days double in the next few decades. Places like this hot intersection on West 54th Street in South Los Angeles. And when that happens, not all streets are created equal. In fact, if you look at an overhead map of LA's trees, most of them are shading wealthy Angeleno neighborhoods.
Maybe you haven't thought about it this way, but shade is an equity issue. Shade is a justice issue.
That's LA Mayor Eric Garcetti. He's been thinking about this a lot, and he says he has a plan. Plant more trees, build more shade for sidewalks and bus stops, and paint the asphalt roads with a surface that's actually reflective. It's all meant to work in concert with the city's other climate-fighting efforts, like slashing emissions, boosting renewable energy, and encouraging you to take public transportation. But how much of a difference will something like this make, especially for communities like this one? KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb spent some time in the Hyde Park neighborhood of South LA to find out.
This is a neighborhood where a lot of people don't have air conditioners, tree-lined streets, or time to get to the beach. And so when it gets hot, you bake. At least that's the experience of Angel Barrera. He's a senior at Alliance William and Carol Ochi High School in Hyde Park.
I'm one of those students that takes the bus a lot, so to school and sometimes back home. And, you know, just being in the sun is very, like, it gets very stressful. You know, you get headaches, you know, you could pass out because, you know, the heat, it's very, very strong.
What's the most obvious way to get shade? Well, trees. But LA isn't naturally blessed with them, especially in neighborhoods like this one. This is where Rachel Malerich comes in as the city of LA's first urban forest officer.
You know, we've known for a long time that our canopy is not equitably distributed across the city. And shade through tree canopy is one of our tools for protecting our communities from heat and from climate change. And it's one of the most cost-effective tools we can use for that.
She wants to plant 90,000 more trees in the next couple years and increase the city's tree canopy by 50% in the next 10. But she says this is a major lift considering the layout of Los Angeles.
On the street where we are right now, there isn't a dedicated parkway space. We have some concrete cuts where trees could go. We have some overhead power lines. So there isn't a ton of room for trees to begin with, which is part of the challenge of my position. We're built out. And so how do we find space where we can put not just trees, but trees that are going to provide significant shade over the course of their lives?
The other big push from the city is changing the pavement. Cool pavement is a light-colored coating that's painted over asphalt. And the idea is to reflect just a little bit more of that hot sun rather than absorb it. Bryn Lindblad works with the nonprofit Climate Resolve. She's demonstrating what cool pavement does to street temperatures.
So Bryn, you're holding two what look like small power drills, but I imagine there's something else.
We call them our heat temperature guns. So you point the laser at different surfaces and you can get a reading out of what's that surface temperature.
So what are we seeing right now? Go ahead and use one. So
we're seeing on our fresh, cool street here, let's see, we've got about 122 degrees.
So hold on, 122 degrees on the asphalt right here in Hyde Park today in October.
Makes you think you could cook an egg on it, huh?
And with this cool pavement, is that the cool pavement over there?
We can go check
out
the pavement in the middle of the intersection too. Yeah. So another stretch here, 110 degrees.
A temperature drop like that, about 10 degrees, is typical. And that's why the city of LA is all over this idea. Over the last couple years, it has covered some 50 blocks in different reflective coatings and seals. And LA Mayor Eric Garcetti announced a plan earlier this year to cover 250 lane miles of city roads in time for the 2028 Summer Olympics. But does it actually work? Well, some say not really. A recent study by a climate scientist at Arizona State University tested this cool pavement in Sun Valley, out in the San Fernando Valley. That study found on a hot, dry day at that location, a person could actually feel 7 degrees warmer on cool pavement, as opposed to a normal blacktop, because the heat radiates upward. Even so, LA Mayor Eric Garcetti says he is not wavering. He says that study is just one look at one place.
We know that the difference between a concrete street and a black asphalt street, we know that, just all of us from doing that, that it can reduce summertime outdoor temperatures for the city, if we do this enough places, by as much as a degree. It certainly works with our rooftops as well. So we know it's a proven science, but we're going to make sure we have those universities out there, and we're going to do a methodical study on it. And it's one of many things in the arsenal that we're doing simultaneously.
Either way, members of this community are thrilled just to see the city paying attention to them, including Lisa Spearman, who's walking down West 54th Street under the baking sun.
I think it's awesome, man, because it gets gravely hot here. 3 years ago when I moved here, I didn't have a car, so I was on the bus stops. And I was on the bus stops, and I was actually inventing things. I was like, man, if they had one of those overheads with the mist sprays, because I think in Vegas some of them have that, you know, where you on the bus stop and they have those overheads and they spray water on you, and they are so awesome. So for California to be doing something like that, it's not falling apart now, it's falling into place.
In Hyde Park, for KCRW, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb.
-99 degrees right now, by the way, in Pasadena, 94 downtown LA, 94 in South LA, where Benjamin was reporting from. So the heat continues, and on days like today, the heat, especially inland, can make things unbearable for a lot of folks. For newcomers to LA, though, there is a high comfort level threshold in meeting fellow Angelenos. Just ask Polly.
It takes a long time to understand how to get to know them and to understand who they are.
An advice columnist helps you get acclimated to a city of angels and other people. Coming up next on Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Check out this recent headline I saw from New York Magazine's Ask Polly column. It said, "I moved to LA and I hate it." Oh man, do I feel like that sometimes too. I moved to this crazy city 11 years ago this month, and yeah, I love it. I love Greater LA, but at least a couple times a week, I say to myself, why do I live here? The traffic, the heat, the materialism, there is a lot to love for sure, but there's also a lot not to love. So what advice do you give to an Angeleno who hates their own town? Heather Haverleski is here to answer that question. She's the Ask Polly columnist. Hey, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. Not hating LA at the moment. I do love this place. It has its intricacies, though, right, that you have to sort of deal with on a day-in and day-out basis. And I want to start by, if you can, set up who this woman is behind the headline. What's going on with her that caused her to write into your advice column?
Well, she moved here 5 years ago. She's working in Hollywood as a TV writer.
Yeah.
She says,
as one does in LA.
As one sometimes does. She says the people she works with are shallow and obnoxious. They spend their time looking for $5 million houses on Zillow all day. They talk about their wives shopping for purses all day. She wants to go back to New York and back to the person she was in New York, even though all her friends have moved away from New York since then. And she just talks about, I don't have any friends. I have very few friends. People only see each other once in a blue moon here. And, you know, I love this letter. It's so vivid. But the feeling that I got when I was reading it was, oh my God, do I remember feeling that way?
Yeah. I mean, you are an Angelina, right?
Oh yeah. I've been here since 1998.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a good 21 years. Yeah.
21?
Yeah, I think you're probably, I mean, if you're not a gold star, you're probably maybe silver star.
I think I'm gold star. I think you hit 20.
You think
20.
You're gold star?
Yeah,
20 is gold
years?
Star? All right, I'm 11, so what am I? Am I bronze star? Is that what I am?
11, yeah. Actually, I remember when I first moved here, people said, you either stay in LA for 2 years,
yeah,
or you'll make it to 12 years.
Yeah.
So before I think
so
you get
12
to silver
years
star.
Is the threshold for me is if, to get the silver star?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't plan on going anywhere. Of course, it's radio, so you never know, Heather, but I don't plan. I do love it. I love it enough here that I would stay for a long, long time.
Well, I think that most people do begin to love it after a while. But when you first move here, it is exceedingly hard to adjust, particularly for people who move from New York to LA. I think that's a rough transition.
I mean, there are a lot of former New Yorkers in LA who probably, you know, see a different sensibility in this town.
Well, I mean, just the practical getting around, how often you see people. And then also, I was explaining to another friend recently, when you first move to LA, people kind of avoid you a little bit because they're worried that you believe that you're going to see them more than, I don't know, once a month. Do you agree with that? It's kind
well,
of like
I
you're,
it,
you're
it depends.
A little, you've got a little bit of a curse on you when you first move to LA, I think, no matter what you do.
Because what? Because
the
you're
pace,
a newbie?
The frequency with which you see people in LA is not, I mean, I see my closest friends once every 2 weeks.
You because of the distance? Because
yeah,
traffic is really bad or what?
I have a friend in Santa Monica I haven't seen in 6 years.
And where
a
do
good
you
friend.
Live? Where do you live?
I live in La Crescenta.
Oh. Well, of course you're not going to go to Santa Monica very often. So your friends, as far as like how far they are away from you is sort of commensurate to how often you see them, of course.
Well, I mean, I think in Los Angeles, the pace of keeping up with people is very slow. It's sort of like, this is great. I had a great time. I'll see you in 3 months is a very common, that's a common thing that people say to you.
Let's get back to the woman who is the TV writer who hears about, you know, men talking about their wives buying purses and, you know, the superficiality of it all. And what did you tell her? What kind of advice did you give her as an Angelino?
Well,
a gold star Angelino.
This gold star Angelino, I mean, I have a lot of empathy for that feeling of having moved here. And I mean, I think for the first 10 years I was here, I was trying to leave pretty much. And then I met my husband and I was kind of stuck. He had a kid here and I needed to stay. So I think the main thing, the main thrust of my response to her was that Los Angeles is filled with really interesting, amazing people. It takes a long time to understand how to get to know them and to understand who they are, because at first everyone is so friendly and so positive that you believe that your life will be a nonstop party, and then they all disappear and you think that they're all full of it. And but the heart of it is that LA is a place that's very friendly to all kinds of different weirdos. It seems very kind of mainstream and sort of just, I don't know, average. And then you scratch the surface and people, they're just freaks everywhere. And everyone loves oddballs in this town. It's actually an easy place to meet interesting people and connect with them. To me, LA is the most nonconformist place I've ever lived. I feel like people live by their own sort of they live by their own, they follow their own drummers, let's put it that way. And when you first get to know people, it's easy to believe that they are simply extremely conventional, extremely optimistic. And then you scratch the surface and, I mean, there is a lot of optimism here. I think the main thing that I find over and over again in LA is if you come armed with, let's say, just your heart and the truth, and you're honest with people, it's actually amazingly easy to connect with other people. People really meet on the ground of honesty here. And I think that a lot of people who, you know, read this particular response who live here actually agree. There's a warmth here that you can't necessarily detect that's genuine. And there's an embrace of originality and unique characters and weirdos. And I say that in a positive sense.
I also think there's a predisposition for people who do come here who sort of already have an idea of what LA is like, or at least think they do. And so they're sort of biased in that regard when they get here. And they're expecting this, and maybe they're surprised. Because I can tell you, before I left where I was to come here years ago, a lot of people told me, they said, hey, you know, it's a hard place to get to know people. It's such a large place. It's so spread out. And there is a bit of superficiality in Los Angeles that you're not going to be able to meet very many people. And the opposite happened. I've met so many great people in this town. I'm a pretty extroverted person in the first place. But at the same time, yeah, I have not had any of those things transpire in the years that I've been here. So a good thing, and it was a pleasant surprise.
Well, it's not an easy place to visit because you're on the freeway a lot more than you want to be. I mean, you know, when people come to visit and they say, hey, I think I might go to the Getty today, you know, and it's like 2 p.m.
Yeah, what time are you going to do that? Yeah,
you have to say, well, if you want to spend the rest of the day sitting in your car on the freeway, then I encourage you to go to the Getty today. But, you know, and also people get in their cars and they drive around town and they're driving and driving and sitting in traffic. And then they go to, you know, Sur or, you know, the hot spot. And it's, of course, it's a scene filled with, the expected types of people. But I mean, LA is like a paradise. I mean, it's beautiful. The weather is amazing. There's so much culture and food and interesting things. I mean, I don't see any of these things because I stay in my house like a hermit all the time. But other people tell me it's
really
great
do,
out
Heather.
There.
My advice to you would be to get out a little more often, especially if you have friends in Santa Monica. I mean, come on.
I have kids and I have dogs. And I don't.
They travel well, too.
I like to sit on my couch and eat snacks. That's my passion. It's my really what I do.
And give advice.
Yes, and give it other people advice on how to leave the house and do things so that I don't have to.
Heather Havrileski is the Ask Polly columnist for The Cut at New York Magazine. Heather, thanks.
Thanks a lot, Steve. It was nice talking to you.
I sure hope you're not trying to get to the Getty right now on the 405, because the northbound lanes, ooh, pretty bad. But of course, it's 121. It can only get worse in LA. Just ahead, how about a macchiato with your chicken joy, or a latte with your yum burger? An LA coffee chain joins a fast food Filipino mainstay, and the result could mean some big business going forward. That's next on KCRW's Greater LA. Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Whatever your experience in LA, chances are you have passed or stopped at or had a cup of joe at a coffee bean and tea leaf. The Starbucks rival started with a little shop in Brentwood decades ago, and over the years has expanded to more than 1,000 stores around the world, in addition to a lot of those street corners in and around LA. But over the summer, the coffee bean got bought out for $350 million by a Filipino fast food chain that you may also know around these parts, called Jollibee, which serves the Yum Burger and Chicken Joy and Jolly Spaghetti. So how is the marriage between the McDonald's of the Philippines and the Starbucks rival of L.A. going to work? Mona Holmes is a reporter at Eater L.A., and she's one of our regulars here at Greater L.A. Hi, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
Do people in L.A. know what Jollibee is?
They do. Even if they don't think they do, they do. There's one that's near the corner of Vermont and Beverly. You can't miss it.
In Koreatown.
In Koreatown. Bright colors. There's a mascot that's this giant life-size bee. That it has a huge Jollibee with a smile on it. And you can't miss it. And it's pretty common to even see tons of people lined up to take a photo in front of it.
Coffee Bean, people do know, was founded in L.A., but a good number of their stores, and I just found this out, are in Asia. They have a lot of stores in L.A., obviously, not a whole lot across this country, but many in Asia.
Is
that what this merger is about, do you think? Do you think this is a strategic maneuver for Jollibee?
I think it is. It does seem like a very smart move to accelerate the growth of Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf as a brand in Asia. And judging from some of the previous transactions that the Jollibee Corporation has done, they're probably going to do something about strengthening their brand, the marketing around it, specifically for Asia.
They're doubling down, Jollibee is. In the United States, they plan to open. Actually, they're opening another store in downtown Los Angeles on 7th and Flower, which is in a very busy corridor, not too far away. I think a block or two away from the 7th Street Metro station.
And it's huge. It's over 4,000 square feet.
That's a big restaurant.
It's a huge restaurant, and they signed a 10-year lease. So it's clear that they want to establish themselves in a really busy spot with a lot of foot traffic in hopes of having some staying power. Now, they also decided to establish their U.S. headquarters in West Covina, and that came as a bit of a surprise, but I think it's a good indicator that they're trying to expand within this market. Your station actually broke the story that they're looking to triple the number of domestic outlets in the U.S. in just 4 years.
But specifically, as it pertains to L.A., there is a large Filipino-American population in this town as
there
well,
is,
right?
There is, half a million.
Half a million people of Filipino descent. And, you know, when you think about, like, the food items that Jollibee offers, like, this is stuff that you're not going to get at McDonald's or a KFC. You get, I mean, obviously fried chicken is a big deal. They have Chicken Joy. They've got the Jolly Spaghetti with the sweets.
They do. Let's talk about that, shall we?
Do we? I don't.
Let's talk about the food. It's unusual. It's when you walk in, it does sound like very American things that they have initially.
They've got
fried chicken. Yeah. They've got a burger. They've got spaghetti. But the flavors are just skewed a little different and more to appeal to Filipino palates.
Maybe tangier, sweeter.
You know, the spaghetti, when you get it, it's a bit of a surprise if you're not used to it. You know, it has a slight sweetness to it, and it's very tangy, as you said. I am a huge fan of their fried chicken.
Yeah.
I actually think it's quite delicious. You know, when you get a really good crunch, that is absolutely the satisfying factor for fried chicken.
We're doing restaurant reviews, by the way, with Mona on fast food fried chicken. I love it.
But one should never skip their peach mango pie, which I guess you could compare to McDonald's apple pie. It's got some different flavors, you know, with the addition of the mango. But also, too, they've got this pineapple drink that I don't think that you could miss. So it's very distinctly different from anything that you've experienced at a fast food spot.
Are they banking on Americans? I mean, we talk about the large Filipino population in L.A., but are they, I mean, if we're going to, what is it, triple, quadruple the number of stores in the next 4 years, how do you do that, you know, with, you're actually changing people's palates, right? You're telling them to try something new.
Sure. I actually have a lot of faith in people that eat out in Los Angeles. They're very adventurous eaters, and they're at least willing to try something once. And it's very possible that the Jollibee Corporation is banking on that. And perhaps they're trying to get an additional element with the acquisition of Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf by creating an entire coffee program. I mean, let's speculate. We might as well.
Well, that's what, you know, and when I first saw this story, I thought, okay. And the hashtag, I think, was like Jolly Bean. Right? Coffee Bean with Jollibee. And I was like, okay, so what are they going to, like, offer Coffee Bean coffee at their stores? Well, are you able to get, like, some Chicken Joy when you're getting a cup of Joe? I mean, I don't know how that's going to work.
I think your guess is as good as mine. But for a city like Los Angeles that is very much used to Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, it may not be a bad strategy to help pull in those new palettes, those new customers with a highly recognizable brand here in Los Angeles.
All right, Mona Holmes, reporter over at Eater LA, and of course one of our regulars. Mona, as always, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Steve.
I want to give you an update now on a big story that's happening in Northern California. This is the Kincaid Fire. NPR will have reports throughout the day. We will have reports as well. But now 10,000 acres. This is in northern Sonoma County, north of San Francisco, the wine country there. No injuries, thankfully. No containment, unfortunately. 10,000 acres at this point. Winds have died down a bit today, but the fire is still being fueled by dry brush and trees. And now SoCal Edison, in our part of the state, Southern California, has shut off power to more than 24,000 customers in L.A., San Bernardino, Ventura, Riverside, and Kern counties because of strong winds, and bracing for those strong winds as they continue. Hot today, highs in the 90s, sunshine all across greater L.A., mid-90s right now. We could even see 100 in some parts of the valley, certainly in the high desert. That's it for today. Next week, the California Coastal Commission is supposed to preserve the public access and affordability to hundreds of miles of coastline. How well is it actually doing that job? Plus, we'll wish the Twilight Zone a happy birthday and remembering its mark on greater L.A. It's Michael Silverblatt and The Bookworm next on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ear and for your time on this Thursday. Have yourself a great day.